and a good Monday morning to you. Happy St. Patrick's Day and welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you on demand anytime by checking out the podcast. It's available in your favorite podcast app wherever you get your shows. Just search for the Nick Craig Show, tap the subscribe or follow button, and take the show with you on demand on your own time. Hopefully you enjoyed what at least was a nice Saturday and a good chunk of Sunday across the Cape Fear region ahead of some nasty storms that rolled through the region last night. One of them potentially causing a tornado in Pender County. A possible tornado touchdown being reported there, according to the Pender County Emergency Management. This happened around 7:30 last night along the 4,000 block of Herring's Chapel Road. That's in the Burgaw area. This was during a line of severe storms that did prompt a tornado warning from the National Weather Service here in Wilmington. Emergency management there says that damage consisted of several snapped trees and downed power lines that did cause some roadways to be blocked. The affected area has very few homes, and fortunately, there's currently no reports of any structural damage or injuries. The National Weather Service, which is based here at the airport in Wilmington, is set to send a storm survey crew to the area today to confirm if there was a brief tornado in Pender County. Fortunately, most of southeastern North Carolina didn't deal with a huge amount of effects, but there was that one tornado warning in our area around 7:30, between 7:30 and 8 o'clock last night. So we'll see what the National Weather Service can figure out as their survey crews are out there, and we'll pass the details along right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, a busy night last night for the UNCW men's basketball team. We covered last week they were successful in winning the CAA tournament, and with that, an automatic bid into the March Madness NCAA men's tournament. And we learned last night that the UNCW Seahawks are a number 14 seed in the tournament, and they've got a very big uphill battle. They'll be playing a number 3 seeded Texas Tech, and with that, they will be playing a Thursday in Wichita in the first round of the tournament. If they are successful in their matchup on Thursday, they will play again on Saturday. So a busy week for the UNCW men's basketball team traveling out west to the Midwest, Wichita, Kansas, for the first round of NCAA play. We wish them the best, and we'll see if there's anything new that comes to light over the next couple of days as they get prepped and head out west for that first game matchup against number 3 seeded Texas Tech. A busy couple weeks of basketball coming up for college basketball fans across the country. Turning our attention to some national news this morning, the Trump administration is making some big time news after they deported hundreds of migrants despite a judge's order stopping the removal. And you know, this has been a very interesting couple of months now to watch. And I mentioned this to you back just a week or two, three weeks into the Trump administration. And this comes down to activist judges. And this is a major issue, regardless of your political party. There is a huge issue with activist judges in America, in which power has been thrust upon these judges to make decisions that have major impacts on the United States. So here's the details as they are this morning. The Trump administration transferred hundreds of immigrants to El Salvador despite a judge's order to temporarily bar the deportations under an 18th century wartime declaration targeting Venezuelan gang members, officials reported on Sunday. Flights were apparently in the air at the time of the ruling. U.S. District Judge James E. Boggsberg issued an order Saturday evening blocking the deportation of these immigrants to El Salvador. However, lawyers for the Trump administration told him that there were already two planes with migrants in flight over international waters, one headed for El Salvador, the other for Honduras. The judge verbally ordered the planes to be turned around, but they apparently were not, and he did not include the directive in his written order. The Salvadorian president tweeted out saying, "Oopsie, too late." The Salvadoran president is a Trump ally who agreed to house about 300 migrants for a year at the cost of about $6 million in his country's prison in a post that he wrote on social media above an article about the ruling. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who negotiated an earlier deal with the Salvadorian president to house the migrants, posted on X, quote, "We sent over 250 alien members of the Tren de Aragua, which El Salvador agreed to hold in their very good jails at a fair price that will also save our taxpayer dollars. The migrants were deported after Trump's declaration of the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which has only been used three times in U.S. history. It was invoked during World War I, World War II, and the War of 1812. And it requires a president to declare the United States is at war, giving him extraordinary power to detain or remove foreigners who otherwise would have protection under immigration or criminal laws. The ACLU, which filed the suit that led to this temporary restraining order on deportations, said it was asking the government whether the removals to El Salvador were in defiance of a court order. The ACLU wrote in a statement on Sunday, quote, "This morning, we asked the government to assure the court that its orders were not violated and are waiting to hear, as well as trying to do our own investigation." The Venezuelan government said in a statement on Sunday rejected the use of Trump's declaration of the law, characterizing it as, quote, "part of the darkest episode in human history from slavery onwards." So, of course, the Venezuelan government, which, by the way, the Tren de Aragua gang, which is based in Venezuela, a member of that gang was picked up in Raleigh about a month and a half ago, was wanted on a plethora of charges, including murders across the Midwest, domestic abuses in Florida. Of course, on top of all of that, illegally coming into the country. So as you can imagine, Venezuela, not a huge fan of what the Trump administration is doing in regards to deporting the dangerous, violent criminals that do spawn from that country. Tren de Aragua originated and is infamously a lawless operation in the central part of Venezuela, the overwhelming majority of whom are, of course, violent, dangerous members of this very violent street gang. Trump seized on this gang during his campaign. He talked about MS-13. He also talked about other gangs like the Tren de Aragua group. But it was one of the groups that he talked about and was part of this larger effort that he talked about during his campaign. And so the question really is this: when does the United States Supreme Court step in on these judges? The president invoking law on the books, whether you like the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 or not, the president in his executive authority invoked that law. And what did a judge do? A judge shot it down. A left-wing activist district court judge is determining what the executive branch can do. And this is a major, major decision and a major discussion that needs to be taken place. What is the role of these district court judges? You know, I remember when we talked about this back a couple of weeks ago, I made the point that the United States Supreme Court, specifically the Chief Justice and John Roberts, has a huge decision to make and really needs to either decide how he wants to handle this going forward. Because the process as it's unfolded right now is that these district court judges, which, by the way, are not enshrined in the United States Constitution, there is nothing that grants district court judges or any sort of judgeships of that manner in the Constitution. The only court spoken of in the Constitution is the Supreme Court, the state's highest court. District court judges were created by Congress to not bog down the Supreme Court with minute issues and keep them busy 24/7. I understand the premise. But what do you do when those judgeships, when those judge benches start getting out of control? Because we've seen just over the last couple of weeks and months, and over a larger period of time, over the last couple of years, these judges becoming more and more partisan and more hyper-political. And so the United States Supreme Court, who at the end of the day will end up hearing many of these cases because they are appealed to a higher court, which is, of course, where they go, the United States Supreme Court has a very fundamental question to ask themselves. What is the role of these courts? And do they have this overarching authority to block executive action from the president? I'm not giving my thoughts on it one way or the other, but in terms of the future of our democratic republic, the future of how our country operates, that to me is a very important question. Because if the executive of the United States wants to roll out things that he believes is in his authority, and he claims it is, groups like the ACLU claim it's not, it has not yet been fleshed out in court. This is a temporary restraining order. The judge did not rule whether the administration was in the right or in the wrong. They issued a temporary stay, which is what you see a lot from these district court judges. So the fact of the matter, the case presented in front of the court has not yet been determined, yet they are ordering the executive branch to stop doing things that they believe is under their authority. And so the U.S. Supreme Court has to ask themselves, how do they go forward with this? Do we allow these district court judges to continue to essentially lead the executive branch around, lead them around, constantly decide what is allowed and what is not on temporary basis, right? Because we're not talking about a permanent decision. We're not talking about a permanent ruling. We're talking about a temporary court-ordered stay by a district judge. The Supreme Court has not dealt with this in the past, and it's unfortunately coming, it's rising to a level where they have to deal with it in a very serious manner. We've seen so many of these temporary stays, so many of these district court judges blocking the administration over the last just 60 days since Trump's been in office, almost two months, that it's a very valid question that needs to be asked. Now, in the case of the decision over the weekend, the White House, a direct quote from the White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said, quote, "The flights were already outside of U.S. airspace, and we believe the order by the judge is not applicable." She stated that the order, quote, "had no lawful basis and was given after the accused, quote, had already been removed from U.S. territory," further stating, quote, "a single judge in a single city cannot direct the movement of an aircraft carrier." And so you're starting to see the verbiage there from Caroline Leavitt. You are starting to see the battlefield be laid by this administration. Stephen Miller has tweeted about this kind of cryptically over the last couple of weeks about these district court judges. And what this is going to come down, this is going to end one way, I can tell you this. This administration, just like the last, is just going to start ignoring court orders. That's how this plays out. And you can look at the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court in John Roberts to clear this up and to deal with this. He has not created this, but he has allowed this to continue to go on. He needs to step in if he's worried about court orders being just completely thrown out and ignored by an administration. We saw that under Biden with student loan forgiveness. We're seeing it under Trump now. And so if Roberts and the Supreme Court is concerned about lawlessness, I'll throw that in air quotes, and an administration ignoring court orders and just doing whatever the hell they want, then it's time for the Supreme Court to step in. It is absolutely time for that to take place. Because what we are setting ourselves up for right now is a crash course in which an administration or administrations just permanently ignore district court judges. And in some cases may just ignore the Supreme Court. We saw that under the Biden administration. Student loan forgiveness, you can't do it. What did Biden do? Continued to do it. continue to find workarounds to forgive hundreds of millions of dollars in student loan debt, which he did not have the authority to do. That is solely under the purview of Congress. We are charting into territory of which we've never been before. And for the Trump administration right now, when Caroline Leavitt says a single judge in a single city cannot direct the movements of an aircraft carrier, she's right. And so you are going to see, I think, a lot of these district court decisions, at least these temporary stays, ignored by this administration. And that is going to force the Supreme Court's hand. You hate to see it come to that. You wish that we had a system in which judges were not acting in a hyper-partisan basis, where you didn't have to worry about a politically motivated decision coming down from a judge blocking a duly elected administration from carrying out the work that they believe they have the authority to do. And, you know, just a tertiary reading of the law indicates that that's the case. You wish it didn't come down to that, but that's exactly what's going on. So this 14-day restraining order that's in place right now, we don't know if it's going to be ignored any further. These flights were already in the air. The plausible deniability is these planes are already outside of U.S. airspace. The damage has already been done. You can't go back and put the genie in the bottle. But does the administration do anything else over the next, at this point, 12 days? The ruling came out on Saturday. Does the administration do anything else over the next 12 days in objection to this judge's temporary order? I don't know. Part of me believes that they should, to force the Supreme Court's hand to actually do something about these judges, to decide how these cases need to be handled and set some precedent. Because I think that's one of the issues, that you're lacking precedent on how to deal with this stuff. When you've got politically motivated judges, politically motivated courts that are overstepping their bounds, overstepping their authority into the executive branch, right? These judges are not elected. These judges are not part of the executive branch. But when they overstep their authority repeatedly to block executive branch authority, what do you do? You are setting up a position and a situation for failure. And there's not, unfortunately, a good answer. Somebody's going to have to be the first one to do it, and it's likely to be Trump. He doesn't care. His administration doesn't care. He's fed up. He's done with the hyper-political nonsense that we have seen fester in our country for so long now. And so would I be surprised if the administration says, to hell with this district judge ruling, we're going to do whatever the hell we want? No, I wouldn't be at all. Force the hand of the Supreme Court. I think that's where we're at right now. And that's what's going to be an interesting discussion to watch, not only in the short term, but likely over the rest of the Trump administration until Chief Justice John Roberts in the country's highest court actually does something. So that's the latest as it stands right now. This is going to be a major political battle that is taking place. We'll continue to track the details and pass them along to you right here on the Nick Craig Show. I want to remind you that you can get access to exclusive content, including our daily show notes, by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. Those show notes are available after we finish the show each and every weekday morning. We'll be having our exclusive Zoom monthly hangout that we do each and every month with our Patreon members coming up next week as well. So stay tuned to that if you are a subscriber of the Patreon. If not, you can go ahead and get subscribed now over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, on Friday, we talked about the government shutdown, where earlier, mid part of last week, you had Democrats, including Chuck Schumer, that were saying there was not a chance that they were going to vote in favor of the Republicans' continuing resolution to keep the government open and operational for the next, I think until September is the way that the CR is written. Democrats said, we're not going to do it. as a couple of days went on, that was like Tuesday, Wednesday of last week, as we got into the latter part of the week, and as the Friday government shutdown loomed, well, the attitude changed. We heard from Chuck Schumer, and when he encouraged his group of Democrat senators to vote in favor of the continuing resolution from the Republicans that came out of the U.S. House. It passed the House without an issue. It then met its way to the Senate, where, yes, Republicans do have the majority, but you need 60 votes to pass something through the Senate like that. And so Democrats originally said, we're not going to do it. Chuck Schumer, we're not going to do it. Then his tune changed on Thursday when he understood and started to realize that this would be incredibly politically damaging and damning for him and the Democrats going forward. So he stood out and encouraged his members to vote in favor of the continuing resolution. And in fact, they did. The Senate advanced the Trump continuing resolution around 5 o'clock on Friday in a vote of 62-38 with 10 Democrats, including Chuck Schumer, voting in favor of that. But Friday after we got off the air, things got very interesting in Washington, D.C. You had a couple of things come out, including a statement from Nancy Pelosi that said this. Pretty remarkable statement coming in from Pelosi. It reads as follows. Donald Trump and Elon Musk have offered the Congress a false choice between a government shutdown or a blank check that makes a devastating assault on the well-being of working families across America. Let me be clear, neither is a good option for the American people. But this false choice that some are buying instead of fighting is unacceptable. I salute leader Hakeem Jeffries for his courage of rejection of this false choice, and I am proud of my colleagues in the House Democrat caucus for overwhelmingly voting against this bill. So in that statement, she says some are buying instead of fighting, and that's unacceptable. She's talking about Chuck Schumer. She's talking about the 10 Senate Democrats that voted in favor of the continuing resolution. And she's referencing Hakeem. Now, I love this. Democrats, the House Democrat caucus with their overwhelming vote against the bill. It doesn't matter that you guys overwhelmingly voted against it. It still passed, right? See, you guys are in the minority here. So even though you overwhelmingly or altogether you Democrats vote against a piece of legislation, that doesn't stop it from passing. It still worked through the House, irregardless of what the Democrats wanted to do. Now you talk, Nancy Pelosi talks about a false choice in her statement here. Nobody cares if you vote against it in the House. The Republicans have the majority. They can control the House with or without you. Right? They don't need your blessing to get things done in the House of Representatives. Speaker Mike Johnson doesn't have to placate to Hakeem Jeffries, doesn't have to placate to Democrat leadership in the House for things to get accomplished. There's just no reason for him to do so. They have the votes. They have the majority. So congratulations for standing on your moral high ground, voting against it in the House, but it passed anyway. Right? It literally doesn't matter. She continued in a part of her statement by saying, quote, America has experienced a Trump shutdown before, but this damaging legislation only makes matters worse. Democrats must not buy into this false choice. We must fight back for a better way. Listen to the women, for the people. Okay, great. Phenomenal, Nancy. Thank you very much. So that's what we heard from Pelosi, and we heard similar comments from Hakeem Jeffries, who, of course, is the leader of the Democrat minority in the House. Jeffries was actively lobbying against Schumer's decision Friday morning or Friday afternoon around 1 o'clock or so before this fully voted in that, before this made its way to a full vote in the Senate. You had the leader of the House essentially calling out Chuck Schumer, watching essentially a civil war take place within the Democrat Party. And that's kind of the premise of the discussion this morning. What we are watching right now is a party that is in revolt. You are watching a party that is struggling to figure out how they handle the issues of the day. A party that, and one of the things that I've always given the Democrats credit for, and I will not understate this, I don't say it mockingly, I don't say it tongue in cheek. The Democrats have always been phenomenal at sticking together. Now, that comes with its downsides. But when big political decisions need to be made, for the most part, really up until Friday, very infrequently did you see Democrats breaking ranks. I was reading comments and conversation on X from Washington, D.C. journalists who have been covering Capitol Hill for 30 plus years, indicating that they've never seen this kind of issue within the Democrat Party. Now, that doesn't mean that the Democrats don't have disagreements with each other. That's not to say that Democrats don't, the Democrats are just always lockstep in everything. But the one thing that they do that the Republicans don't is they fight their battles behind the scenes. They fight their battles behind closed doors. They come to a consensus, they come to an agreement, and they stand in public as a unified party. And that has made the Democrats very effective politically. Because this infighting that you constantly see within the Republicans, as members of Congress have to prove how strong of a conservative they are by, you know, voting against everything that comes out of a Republican administration, a.k.a. Thomas Massey, who has literally not voted in favor with Trump on anything since Trump's been in the Oval Office over the last 60 days. Because he's the only principled conservative in the entire freaking country. So Thomas Massey, the hero of the Republican Party. Democrats have these battles behind the scenes, behind the closed doors. And what you saw Friday was a party that was not having these discussions privately. They were airing it out in public for everybody to watch and everybody to hear. Here's Hakeem Jeffries Friday afternoon before the Senate vote.
Our general view is that we do not want to shut down the government. But we are not afraid of a government funding showdown. And we will win that showdown.
Now, Jeffrey says we will win the showdown. We're not afraid of it. Calling out Chuck Schumer. Calling out Senate Democrats that were going to, this is again was before the vote, but calling out those Senate Democrats that were going to vote in favor of the legislation. Jeffries thinks and says, we will win the showdown. I don't think that's true. Chuck Schumer, regardless of what you think of him and his politics, he knows what's going on. He has been in power long enough. He knows the political game probably better than almost anybody else. He knows and knew that voting against this continuing resolution in the Senate would be political dynamite. Complete and total political dynamite for the Democrats. He knew that if he stood up there and encouraged his members to vote against this legislation, that they would lose the public battle, they would lose the public perception, and there was nothing he could do to stop it. It'd be a runaway train for the Democrats. And it makes sense, does it not? Right? You have a continuing resolution that passed the House. You have a majority of Republicans, all Republicans, voting for it in the Senate. So if it doesn't pass, if it didn't go forward, then there would only be one person and one party to blame. That would be the Democrats. Now, in the past, the Democrats have been successful at using their power within the mainstream media, use their authority and the media establishment that, of course, they own, they control, they operate, they tell individuals This is, they tell the media, this is what you need to say. This is what you need to do. This is your, these are your talking points. They've been able to use their media in the past to spin unpopular issues, unpopular narrative, and unpopular ideas into something that is positive. I'll throw that in quotes, using the power of the mainstream media. They've been very successful in doing that. But as the media has, as mainstream media, I should say, as they continue to fall apart, as individuals continue to turn to alternative sources of media, look towards new outlets like X, like YouTube, like Rumble, like we're all, you know, we're the, all the places that we're streaming this morning, that media and the trust in that media has eroded. And there's only so much water that the mainstream media can carry. There's only so much that can be done. There's only really so much that you can cover for, right? And Chuck Schumer and his staff and the individuals advising him and giving him advice in D.C. understand that that is that that seal has cracked. And so the days of the past where Democrats could vote to shut down the government, essentially, and then go run to their media partners and have them whip up and gin up and say, nope, it's not our fault, even though we voted against it, it's those damn Republicans. The fact that that's gone, it put Chuck Schumer in a very precarious situation, breaking ranks with individuals like Hakeem Jeffries and Nancy Pelosi, who also are very smart, very influential people within the Democrat Party. But I think in all of this, Chuck Schumer was right. I think Nancy Pelosi and Hakeem Jeffries are wrong. And this was backed up, this, you know, hindsight's 2020, of course. But this was backed up over the weekend with two new unbelievably disastrous, damaging political polls for the Democrat Party. The first, NBC News. This was an NBC News poll released yesterday morning. The headline, this is the headline article. This is not me reading into the poll, which I did, but this is not me reading into the poll and pulling out a little nugget and trying to spin it. This is the first sentence, the first words out of the NBC News article. The Democrat Party has reached an all-time low in popularity in the latest national NBC News poll as it searches for a path forward against a painful loss to President Donald Trump and as the party's voters spoil for a fight between their leaders in Washington, D.C. Wow. That's an NBC News headline. You don't believe me? Take a look at it for those watching on YouTube, Rumble, or X this morning. This was the first sentence out of the article over at NBC News. It goes on to say this: just over a quarter of registered voters, 27%, say they have a positive view of the Democrat Party, which is the lowest positive rating in the NBC News poll dating back to the 1990s. In this case, 1990 exactly. So within a 35-year poll that NBC News is doing, Democrats have just a 27% positivity rating amongst registered voters, with only 7% saying their views of the Democrat Party are positive. This is incredibly damaging for the left. Don't believe me? Let's ask Democratic pollster Jeff Horowitz of Hart Research Associates, who conducted the survey along with GOP pollster Bill McTurniff of Public Opinion Strategies. Democrat pollster says this: with these numbers, the Democrat Party is not in need of a rebrand. It's in need to be rebooted. That says a lot. When you've got Democrat pollsters saying, hey, whatever you guys are trying to do, it's not working. It's time to reboot this whole thing. Now, he says they don't need a rebrand. I disagree with that part of it. But he says they need a reboot. And it's pretty hard to argue with that. Just a 27% positivity rating for the Democrats? Now, that's the NBC News poll. CNN released a completely separate independent poll on Sunday as well, and they asked a similar question. They've been asking this question. The poll is conducted by SSRS Research. They've been asking the question about party favorability since September of 2006, so almost 20 years on this poll. And the question was, quote, "We'd like to get your overall opinion of some people in and groups in news. For each, please indicate if you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of these people or groups, or if you've never heard of them." When poll respondents were asked of the Democrat Party, the poll conducted March 6th through the 9th found that only 29% of individuals had a favorable opinion of the Democrat Party. That is the lowest percentage ever in this poll, dating back to September 22nd of 2006. The lowest that they have ever seen. In terms of the unfavorable opinion, 54% unfavorable. Now, that's not the highest ever. It was also 54% November of 2016, just days after the presidential election. Democrats unhappy with the Democrat Party, unhappy with candidate Hillary Clinton at the time, that, you know, convinced them and told them Trump's an idiot. Trump can't win. It's impossible. Lo and behold, early November 2016, Trump wins the election. Lo and behold, he becomes the 45th president of the United States. So Democrats had a 54% unfavorable opinion then as well. So tying that number from 2016. And so you've got a couple of issues that are all kind of coming together right now for the Democrat Party, at least as I see it. First of all, you've got the election in November. Democrats were not in love with Joe Biden. However, we're talking about Democrat voters, individuals who were responding to the CNN, responding to the NBC News poll. They were unhappy with Joe Biden. His popularity was not very hot, even amongst Democrats. But the party thought they knew best. You know, the David Axelrods of the Democrat Party, the puppet masters behind the scenes pulling the strings for the Democrat Party, they knew best. They kept Joe Biden up there. They shuffled him into the position. And lo and behold, he ends up dropping out. With his dropout, voters did not have a choice. The very unpopular, very ineffective vice president in Kamala Harris was sucked up into the position of the presidential nominee without a vote of the people, without a convention. She was crowned the Democrat nominee. That a lot of Democrats were not in favor of that. Now, I know you probably saw the "I'm with her" and all the stupid Kamala bumper stickers and things flying around. Those are your party loyalists. But when you look at more middle of the road, more moderate Democrat voters who are likely to be turned off by somebody like Donald Trump, who tends to have a high unfavorability amongst some of those voters, they weren't a fan of her at all. They were not a fan of the vice president. They didn't see anything that she accomplished in the 4 years that she was in the VP's office that made them think, oh yeah, she'd be a great candidate for president. But nevertheless, Democrats and the Democrat establishment know best. They promote her, they propel her to this position, they push her forward, and then early November of last year rolls around and she gets freaking annihilated. Early November rolls around, Trump doesn't have a shot, right? He's an unserious candidate. There's no chance that he wins. Harris is right, and the polling is all wrong. It's going to be a landslide for Harris and the Democrats. They got their freaking clocks cleaned. Kamala Harris lost the Democrats the popular vote for the first time in over 20 years. She got killed in the Electoral College. And by the way, Republicans retained majorities in the House and picked up a majority in the Senate. So all of this just in the span of a couple of weeks, literally from the start of her campaign to Election Day. So you had all of that in the latter part of last year. Trump, of course, wins. He becomes the president-elect in November. Democrats say, and of course, go on TV and claim the election stolen. And of course, they're the party of election denying, so no surprise there. Then we transition into the early part of this year. January 20th, to be exact. Inauguration Day for the 47th President of the United States and Donald Trump. Democrats defeated, feeling defeated, rightfully so. They, again, had just taken a serious ass-whooping back a couple of months prior. Now they're at a position where Trump is in the Oval Office. He is freaking dismantling the government at an unbelievable rate. He is hacking and slashing all of these liberal democratic institutions, USAID, seven more executive orders on Friday, getting rid of liberal propaganda like the Voice of America, talking about shutting down the Department of Education, firing thousands of federal workers, having tens of thousands of them take a voluntary buyout to leave the government. I mean, this is the Democrats' worst nightmare. They have spent decades building up big government. And within less than 60 days, folks, it's March 17th. Trump's not even been in office 2 full months. In less than 60 days, Trump has dismantled decades of work that the Democrats have put in. I covered it last week. Lee Zeldin, head of EPA, rolled back and had the biggest regulatory deregulation in the EPA's history in one day last week with the single stroke of a pen, and an actual pen, not an auto pen like Joe Biden was using to sign all of his pardons, but an actual pen. Trump and the Republicans, Trump and his cabinet, are dismantling all of the Democrat institutions. Everything that they fought so hard for, all of the areas in which they had instituted their far-left radical propaganda agenda, is being stripped out and cut down by Trump. So if you're a Democrat sitting at home, maybe you're a federal worker, you're working your second job, which you're not doing either, and you're sitting on the couch watching MSNBC, and you're watching Trump literally dismantle everything that you believe in and stand for, all of these institutions that are the crown jewels, the prized possessions of the left, why would you have a favorable opinion of the Democrat Party? They screwed you. The Democrat Party ran an awful candidate, an awful, unlikable candidate, who got destroyed in the election, and now you are watching all of your ideals, all of your political power be completely drained away. So it is not surprising or shocking to me at all that the favorability or unfavorability rating of the Democrats are where they are right now. I'm not surprised. I try and put myself in the position of people. That's why I read news from all over the place. Talk about Ground News coming up here in just a second. It's one of the reasons I love using Ground News. So I can read both opinion, both sides of an issue. I can look at the left-leaning opinion. I can look at the right-leaning opinion. Try putting yourself, and I know this is going to be tough, but put yourself in the shoes of a card-carrying Democrat voter right now. You guys worked so hard to use the federal government as your sword, to wield your political power through the auspices of the federal government, through the bureaucracy, and Trump is dismantling it literally day by day. Every day there's a new executive order. Every day there's a new directive coming out from some administration or the other. Dan Bongino is set to be the assistant director of the FBI. Cash Patel is leading that agency. That was your guys' boogeyman that you could run around the United States to charge and arrest your political opponents. All of it's gone within the matter of 60 days. I can't imagine being a hardcore lefty and watching all of this disintegrate in front of my very eyes, I would be livid with the Democrat Party. I would be so beyond pissed with the individuals in charge that put us in this situation. And so you're seeing this polling. You're seeing this revolt now within the high ups within the Democrat Party. You've got the House and the Senate that are breaking on the variety of issues. You've got Chuck Schumer telling Democrats, hey, you've got to vote for this continuing resolution in the Senate. Meanwhile, you've got Hakeem Jeffries and Pelosi calling him out as weak, saying this is a battle we need to fight. Don't buy in to what the Republicans are telling you. We've never seen this publicly from the Democrat Party before. I'm dead serious. We've never seen this happen publicly like this, at least in my time following politics and from what I was reading on X from left-leaning journalists that cover Washington, D.C. politics. You've never seen this. They'd never seen this before, at least at this level, where you've actively got the party fighting itself in major, major decisions. And so the Democrat Party has an interesting proposition in front of them right now. He's got to ask himself, or the Democrat Party's got to ask itself, what do we do going forward? Now, one of the interesting things out of the NBC News poll, out of the CNN poll, is that the Democrat voters that were responding to this poll that are unhappy with the Democrat Party, they want the Democrats to fight against Trump. And so this kind of breaks an interesting way for Chuck Schumer. He, of course, needs to stay in favor with his party loyals. And if they want the Democrats to fight Trump, then he's got to fight Trump. But at the same time, while he's fighting Trump because that's what the Democrats want, what does that do to the more moderate voters in your party? That's where Chuck Schumer and Democrats like Hakeem Jeffries are going to have, that's the line that they're going to have to straddle over the next couple of months and years. Yes, fight back against Trump, right? If you're a far lefty, a hardcore leftist, you want to fight against Trump. You want the Democrats to work with the president on, and the Republicans on nothing. And if that means bringing the government to a halt, they're okay with that. And by the way, I'm okay with that too. So maybe we're in agreement on that. And so that's how you deal with the party loyalists in the Democrat Party. But what do you do with those moderate voters? The individuals that want bipartisanship. The individuals that typically, and in many cases, vote a split ticket. You've heard me use the phrase ping pong voter before if you've been a longtime listener of me. These are individuals that literally vote for Democrats and Republicans. Case in point, here in North Carolina. First swing state to be called for Donald Trump, yet Democrat Governor Josh Stein wins by a 15-point landslide margin, the largest in a governor's victory in over 40 years in the state. Now, part of that is because of the disastrous campaign and the disastrous candidate that Mark Robinson is and was. But those voters exist. Look at the presidential election in 2020 and in 16. Trump won both of those, yet Roy Cooper became was the governor both times. He won in 16, he won in 20. He was very successful in those elections as a Democrat governor in a state that voted for a Republican president. Right? These voters do exist. I know Republicans want to bury their head in the sand and pretend and act like these people don't happen. How could North Carolina vote for Trump and then for Josh Stein or Roy Cooper? Because middle-of-the-road voters exist, and they want a balance in government. And so those middle-of-the-road voters that want a balance in government, if they see the Democrats completely shutting themselves off to working with the party in charge, which is the Republicans, what is that going to do to those middle-of-the-road voters? I don't have all of the answers this morning. I'm not going to have many of these answers because I'm, of course, not in the Democrat Party. But they are dealing with a major problem within their party right now. Major infighting. And the question that they have to ask themselves is, who do they placate towards? I mean, really, that's what this comes down to. Do the Democrats play into their liberal base? Or do they play into the more moderate, middle-of-the-road voters in working in a split government? I don't have the right answer. In terms of the continuing resolution, I tend to believe Chuck Schumer was probably right. I think even though Hakeem Jeffries and Pelosi can say they'd be okay with the government shutdown, I'm not sure they would have actually voted against it. Now, they easily could in the House because their vote didn't matter, right? It's easy to stand up or stand for something when your vote doesn't count. When, regardless of what you do, it still passes or it still fails. That's pretty easy. But when Chuck Schumer and Senate Democrats were faced with the decision, do we keep the government open or do we close it? It's a much tougher decision to make. And I think he made the right decision in terms of for his political party. Now, as I mentioned last week, I don't particularly care if the government shuts down or not. Now, in terms of Trump's agenda, the continuing resolution will allow him to continue that. So there's some positives there. There's some silver lining there. But what we are likely to see over the coming weeks and months and years with the Democrat Party is fascinating. We are going to watch a party, it seems like, publicly battle this thing out and figure out where their identity is and figure out how they come back into favor, not only with their own voters that are very jaded from the election still from last year, but how do they win over and convince middle-of-the-road, moderate American voters that they are the party, that they are the party of America, that they are the party with the best ideas, that they are the party that you need to vote for when you head to a ballot box in the midterm elections coming up in November of next year. That's what's on the Democrats' plates as of this morning. And they've got major, major decisions to make. And I am all along for the ride. It is going to be a very interesting thing to watch publicly. And finally, for once, it won't be the Republicans having knockout, drag out battles in public in front of the entire country to see. It's nice for when the shoe's on the other foot from time to time. And I mentioned ground news, and I mean it. When I'm looking for stories like this government shutdown issue, I love getting both sides of the equation. And that's what I use ground.news for, that and so many other of the stories that make it to our show here each and every weekday morning. I've got an exclusive deal for you this morning. If you head on over to nickcraig.com/ground, you can get access to ground.news for just 40% off. You can get access to their plan that offers things like the blind spot feature, which shows you stories that are disproportionately reported by the left or the right. One of the other great features of ground.news is that political blind spot feature. And you can also see the political makeup of a news organization, where their funding comes from, all of that available at ground.news. You can get 40% off your subscription right now by visiting nickcraig.com/ground. That's nickcraig.com/ground and subscribe to ground.news. Appreciate Ground News for their support of the Nick Craig Show. Well, we are a little bit shorter this morning. That's because I've got a busy afternoon as I'll be making my way back to the airwaves over on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. I am filling in for Pete Callender noon to 3 both today and tomorrow. So hopefully you'll join me for that. If you can't join me live 12 to 3, make sure you check out the podcast. I'll be on WBT this afternoon. However, that's going to do it for a Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thank you so much for joining us. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 7 on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts.